Our gospel reading today is from Luke, chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. Now, on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place here in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him." Then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all the things that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near to the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart." Jesus, excuse me, but do you think you could be a little nicer? I mean, listen, these people have been through a horrible tragedy. I'm trying to learn by your example how I'm supposed to treat other people, and I've got to say, in my humble opinion, telling suffering people that they're foolish is not really a sound pastoral strategy. I have to be honest with all of you. When I read through this lectionary text for the first time, I thought, this is not the kind of Jesus that I want to preach about. Where is the good news in being called foolish in the aftermath of a trauma? Sure, I know, we just experienced Easter. Here Jesus is, up and walking among us, having conquered death. We have heard the hope. We heard last week's beautiful message about reasonable doubts and having faith in trustworthy people. But this week, we are invited to revisit for a moment the aftermath of the horrible experiences of Good Friday. We are invited to imagine how it felt to keep going for the people who lost a vital piece of their identity in Jesus's violent death. In the text, these two Christ followers can't just get over the crucifixion because they heard about the resurrection. It's not that simple. And that's why this proclamation from Jesus, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart," stood out to me when I read this text. This passage is found in the Gospel of Luke. Each of the Gospels has their own take on Jesus based on their intended audiences. Matthew's Jesus is very Jewish. Mark's Jesus is very human. And Luke's Jesus does a lot of interacting with the other, with enemies, with the marginalized, Pharisees, outsiders, women. He offers his compassion to the other more than in any other gospel. Luke's Jesus is a healer, present to the suffering of people during his life. So why then does he show up here for this traumatic suffering and call his beloved followers foolish? The identity of the author of Luke is uncertain, but we know he was writing several decades after the events of the crucifixion. We could talk about his context, the audience to which he was writing, and his method of persuasion. But for the sake of this sermon, I'm interested in the characters of this story in their own context, immediately post-crucifixion, and how people under those circumstances might have reacted to the public and violent loss of their identity. It's impossible to say from this vantage point in the 21st century, across centuries of oral tradition and translation and interpretation, what exactly it would have felt like to be a follower of Jesus in these first few days after the crucifixion. But one way of narrating this story is to understand that these characters, these Jesus followers, were on the fringe of societal norms. They were people living under the rule of the Roman Empire, part of a mix of nations conquered and forced to assimilate in many ways to Roman norms. In this society, the social hierarchy was extremely important. The Roman emperor was set up not only as a governmental leader, but as a religious one, not just a human with human powers, but revered as a near deity. He was sometimes called the Son of God. Underneath the emperor, male Roman citizens were the most privileged, able to speak publicly, to exercise political rights, to own slaves. They were considered the most civilized, in fact, the most human. And everyone else, women, slaves, colonized nations, including the Jewish people, occupied a place below them. It is within this context that Jesus enters the stage. It is within this context that people began to follow Jesus, to break social barriers with each other, and to resist the narrative of the Roman Empire that said that they were unworthy of full participation, of full humanity. The Jesus followers in Luke's story are acquainted with a man who was constantly affirming the humanity of people who the empire sought to conquer and subdue. Within this understanding of Jesus' ministry, following Jesus meant choosing every day to believe in a kind of liberation that ran counter to everything the empire said was true. We can imagine that these two characters in our story were choosing daily to live with a kind of bravery about themselves, every day acting on a conviction about divine truth that ran counter to what they had been taught. We can imagine that when Jesus was crucified, an act that, according to the empire, marked him as a conquered criminal, putting him back in his appropriate societal place, these Jesus followers had to have been wondering, when the empire finally won, if all of the lies that the empire had told about them and how unworthy they were might actually be true. I think in a lot of ways, power works today like it did in Jesus' time. We've gotten pretty good at hiding some of the lies that we tell about who is more worthy of love, of citizenship, of humanity, but we still tell them to each other, sometimes even without knowing. And the truth is, learning to tell these lies is the natural outcome of living in a society that questions things like whether Muslim refugees of violence are themselves perpetrators of that violence, or whether transgender people should be able to use the restroom in public, or whether black and brown people are less redeemable than white people, whether fat people are irresponsible and unhealthy, whether gay people should play a role in our churches, or survivors of sexual assault are somehow responsible for their own suffering. We are so inundated with these narratives that we get caught up believing in their subtleties that let us see each other and ourselves as less than children of God. Even if we spend much of our time trying to choose to see all human beings as worthy of love, it can take more than a lifetime to unlearn some of the oppressions the world is trying to convince us of. We are convinced by the lies, even when we know better. Believing in the good truth of human worthiness against the foolishness of empire is not that simple. And on a more personal level, we come to believe some pretty foolish lies about ourselves, don't we? Maybe when you were a little girl, you were told that you'd never be any good at math. And so even to this day, when you sit down to do your taxes, the tears are right there. Or maybe a long time ago, you lost someone who was really important to you, and you came to believe that the people you love will always leave. Or maybe someone convinced you that because of some ridiculous line of reasoning that you can't even remember, you don't deserve to be happy. We all come to believe some pretty foolish lies about ourselves. And sometimes, somewhere in our daily lives of struggling to survive against the resistance of these lies, we reach a day when the empire wins a victory. So Jesus is crucified, and our worst fears are confirmed. We heard a rumor that Jesus had risen from the tomb and walked away, but we are so tired of fighting the empire that we just feel like languishing in our despair a little bit longer. It is in this moment that Luke's Jesus meets his two followers on the road. It is in this moment that he calls them foolish. But this strategy doesn't really work, does it? These two followers, though they later tell us they were moved by Jesus' lecture, don't have their moment of revelation when they hear his logic. I think in our story that Jesus knows he didn't get it quite right, and so he tries again. But this time, he takes a risk on them. When they are nearing their destination, Jesus walks ahead as if he were going on, and they take the bait. His followers, having just been devastated by tragedy and then lectured and insulted by a stranger, they choose again to invest. They choose the path of hospitality in a moment when the world would say that is ridiculous. These two Jesus followers were wiser than perhaps they gave themselves credit for. They welcomed the stranger into their home to practice some fellowship, to live out the call that they couldn't quite believe. And it is in this moment of being willing to choose to try this radical path one more time that they recognize Jesus for the truth he represents. He blesses the bread and breaks it. They see the truth, and then he is gone. We learn from this story that the capacity to choose is within us. It's not that we don't know the truths about our own lives. It's just that many times we need to be reminded, and it usually takes more than being called foolish and given a good lecture. That's one of the reasons we form gay straight alliances or racial identity caucuses. It's why we form grief or mental health support groups. It's why we seek out stories told by others who have experienced the same things as us to validate what we know to be true in the face of great resistance. It's why sometimes the best way to care for our truth is to surround ourselves with friends, even when we don't really feel like being friendly. We can't always logic ourselves out of foolishness, but we can choose to act together in the direction of truth, even when we don't quite believe in it. Jesus' followers, finally aware of the divine presence that had been with them all along, look to each other and say, "Didn't we already know? Didn't we feel it? How could we have missed what was so obvious?" More often than not, we will let foolish arguments deny us the miracles that we know in our hearts to be divinely true. But we don't stay in foolishness forever. God has a way of nudging us to choose the truth again by giving us hunches and opportunities to do the co-creative work of bringing the truth to life, by bringing people into our lives who will offer us the bread of life and the truth that burns in our hearts. The good news is here. Will we be foolish, or will we invite it in?